Matt, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi guys. As was said, I've gone around these things because they saved my life. I was born in Poland. I was born in a small town called Sabnica. Originally came from there till about age of 10. My parents got divorced at a very early age. Didn't have a father. That's why I kind of didn't drink till later time in my life. Around 19 years of age, that's when I really started to drink, when I started to work with my uncle. Around 10 years of age, my mom and my grandma decided that we were going to move to America. They picked us up. I'm the youngest of three kids, and they picked us up and moved us to America. This is a whole new life for me. I had no English skills like I do now. They put me in a new place, and they said go to school. I didn't know anybody. I was lost. I felt lost. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't feel like I belonged here. This continued on. Throughout the school, I had to make friends, but I had to act goofy in order for anybody to like me. Always needed to be center of attention. And it just kept on going. Before we went to America, two of my friends, they threw a little bonfire, and they brought a bottle of wine. This was at 10 years of age. They picked up a bottle of wine, brought it to this bonfire, and we drank it. It was the first time that I tasted alcohol. That wasn't enough. We went to pick up another bottle at 10 years of age, and we could have got it because it was Poland in 93. I liked what it did. I could talk to the girls, but it made me feel like I belonged, first time, like I belonged. Then I continued on. We went to the States. I found cigarettes, found other stuff that kept me alive till about the age of 15, where my brother and my cousin threw a party where my mom bought a new house. She threw a party, my brother threw a party with my cousin. I went in there, and they gave me alcohol. The first time I tried that strong alcohol, which was vodka, my life changed. I remember there was this girl that I met at school. I was a freshman, and I could not talk to anybody. And I drank that alcohol, and I could talk to everybody. And that was my life. I opened up right there, and I ended up puking over the bathroom. And later, I found out that my brother and my cousin, the night before, smashed the car, and it was garage hidden. And I didn't see nothing wrong with that. And they're still drinking. Even though that car is smashed in the garage, they're still drinking. After the age of 15, I didn't continue to drink. The idea came to me that, you know, my father has left. We are living, just my mom working, raising three guys, and it just did not fit. This lady did everything for us so we could have a better life, and worked really hard. And so I hated my father for it. At the age of 19, when I graduated high school, my uncle started a business and got me involved in it. I was working at UPS at the time, and he had a business granite business. So we started to work together. My uncle was a functioning heavy drinker, I should say. Kept drinking on the jobs, and he showed me how it is to drink during work. How it's okay to drink in the morning. How it's okay to go at 12 o'clock and pick up another 12-pack. Anything continued. For him, he could work. For me, when I drink, I do not work. I don't work. I don't want to work. I don't care what happens. I continue to drink. So we continued to drink beer at first. But that was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And on Saturday, it would be the hard alcohol. After the hard alcohol, he would continue to go home and drink. I would continue to go home and drink. But then I found an outside issue that I also fell in love with. And those two things came together where just rocked my world. Rocked my world. And one didn't go without the other. So So if I drank, I went for an outside issue to continue to drink. And when I was done with the outside issue, the drinking continued. So for me, I know that I am a true alcoholic, and I am a powerless, as powerless as you can be over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable. And I know that today for sure. That word alcoholic, I didn't know what it meant when I first came to AA. When they passed around the 12 steps, all I was doing is concentrating on, is my voice going to sound okay if they give it to me? Am I going to introduce myself okay as an alcoholic? I did not know what an alcoholic is. Today, I do know what an alcoholic is. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. Alcohol is just my solution. So today, I know that for me, it's a total abstinence, and the only way to do that is by sticking over here, sticking with you guys, and continuing my journey. Sticking with these conventions, sticking with the steps, sticking with the meetings, and you guys helped me out. You guys showed me the way. My first time at a meeting wasn't like that. My first time when I came to a meeting was because my brother got caught drinking and driving. So he was court mandated, and at 30 days, he was going to pick up a chick where he was allowed to bring a family member. So I go to this meeting at a courthouse, and we're sitting at this meeting. This guy that's chairing the meeting, there's a group of people sitting at the meeting, and my brother is taking a chip. He's telling his story. I know in the back of my head he's drinking. He's not being honest. And I'm sitting there for the wrong reasons, because I'm sitting there and watching him tell his story. And across the table from me is sitting a guy that I just traded my watch. And he's sitting like this with my watch on his wrist because I traded it for an outside issue the night before. And that's my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. did not go there for the right reasons. My real first Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and this is to the guys that do the H&I panel. If some of you don't know what that is, that's hospitals and institutions. At the early age of 27, I got locked up in prison for doing my dues. The journey continued. I ended up going jails, month, a weekend here, a month here, and then ended up going for 3 years because I committed a couple crimes that weren't allowed. And I was borrowing things from people that didn't lose anything, you know, breaking in the cars, and I'm not proud of that kind of stuff. But finally, when they caught me for one felony, they came for the second. You know, they told me, if you do this again, it's going to be more serious. And you could not stop me, because if I drink, I steal everything that is not bolted down. I break into cars, I steal cars, and then that's what happened. They caught me for the second time, and they said, well, you know what? We got to put you away. You know, we got to put you away. And this is what happened. They put me away. I told them the story. It's from the area where my hotel, I should say hotel, where I know this place, Dixon, Illinois. I had to do 3 years. The original sentence was to do 160 days of boot camp. And so I agreed to that. But I did not know that at that time, it's not what's happening with Trump, but he's deporting people. George Bush did it as well. They told me that because I was not a citizen, you're a citizen, we're going to take your papers and we're going to send you back. And at the age of 29 years, you know, they packed me up and shipped me back to Poland. And that's where I got mad. You know, that's where I got mad at alcohol. I was not going to drink ever again because that happened. They took my family away, and I was blaming everybody but myself. I was blaming everybody, the whole world, the government, the police, everybody. But one good thing came out of that. My first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting where I was introduced to the solution. There was a guy by the name of Eddie Dixon that was living in a building 42 and was doing 25 years for the double murder. And I was sitting in my cell, and he comes up, we started to talk, and he's like, hey, what are you in here for? I tell him, he's like, hey, you don't want to go to an AA meeting. I'm like, what, are you crazy? So I'm gonna go to the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings in prison. He's like, well, listen, your crimes that you've committed, were you ever sober? Oh my, that's the question. And my life went through my head, and I said, oh my God, I was never sober. It's always when I was drinking, always when I was drugging, I always did this stuff. When I'm sober, I'm somewhat normal. And that's how planted the seed. That's how he planted the seed. He trusted me. That was the first guy that trusted me. You know, and so we started going to these meetings. There was a lady that came there on Thursdays. Her name was Maria, and she was about 70 some years old. I say always 150, but that's how she looked. And on Thursdays, she showed up to all men's prison to share her story, to share hope, you know, and I fell in love with that. So I got my books. My AA book still is from that person. Still from that person. I ended up going back to Poland. Thank God my aunt had enough, courage to take me in, because I'm an ex-con, you know, I got deported, people talking. So I go to Poland, I take 2 weeks off, I start going to AA meeting. I went to my first Polish AA meeting and I say, well, that's not it. This is not it. I'm from America. This is not the meaning that I want. So I leave. I stop reading my book. I stop praying. And in the matter of a couple months, I go back. And it's the first thing in the outside issue that I take. I think it's only for one weekend. And then I go back to drinking. And once that drinking starts, I ruin everything. I found a woman that we fell in love when I first got there. We were dating. We had a child. We were really happy. My daughter, I always knew my first daughter was going to be named Michelle. If there's any Michelles, that's a beautiful name. And I have a daughter that's 13 today with that name. And I love that child. I didn't want to drink, and I was happy with it. But then that happened when I started going back to drinking. We found out she came over here. I was drinking. She could not bear that. She had to leave. I dropped her back to Poland. And I said, well, it didn't bother me because I couldn't drink normal when they were here. There was always complaining, there was fights at home, and I dropped her off in Poland. We found out that she was pregnant again with my son. And, I was happy for a little bit, tried to stop drinking and drugging. Went back to Poland and my son was gonna be born. I go to, you know, my wife had a C-section with the first baby, so you cannot be in a hospital in the same room when she's giving birth. That's still just the rules of Poland. So I go to the hospital, driving them, she's supposed to give birth, and the doctor says, you know what, we don't have space today, but it's Monday, we'll probably have space for Wednesday, so you're okay to go home. So I'm planning back in my head that, if that's the Wednesday, that gives me one day of leniency. I could put some alcohol, drink it. By Wednesday, I'll be sober. I come to the hospital, nobody will know. Go to the store, I drop her off, everything's okay, give her a kiss, come back home. On my way home, I stop at the store, pick up alcohol, call the dealer, and I'm on. The doctor had a change of plans. The birth was on that night. I did not make it to the hospital till Wednesday. I was barely alive. And I looked that woman in the eyes, and I seen that shame and guilt. And he said, how can you do this to me? How can you do this to me? I picked up that child, first time in my life. And I held him in my hands, and I promised him in my head, listen, I will never, till you're 18, till you're 18, this, drink or do any kind of outside issue. And this I promise you. This I promise you. I left the hospital 2 hours later. I was the same. 2 hours later. My journey continued. November of 2014, I went back to Poland. There was a big fight at home. I started drinking again. In a blackout, from what my neighbors told me, in a blackout, my neighbors told me that I turned off I told my wife I turned off all the safety switches, and I told her I was going to kill her and the kids. And they ran out. My wife ran out, left the kids. The only thing I remember is the police coming in and me kicking the TV. Coming back out the next day, and I'm thinking, the whole world is their fault, not mine. It's always their fault, not mine. I don't see the problem. I don't see the problem. You know? But I already came in contact with AA. I called AA, but I wasn't ready yet, you know. It was 2 months, back out. 9 months, back out. came back to Belgium, working here, and then I was already going to meetings in Bruges, and for Christmas, 5 minutes.
Okay, I'm rushing.
Okay, so thank you. So, okay, okay, let's start over. My name is Mehmet Akali. So, yeah, I go back, and then 2 months later, after my wife moved out, my wife moved out, I drink again. And this is for 5 days, 6 nights straight. And it's to that point where I cannot take it anymore. And I kneel down and I say, God, take this from me. I cannot do it anymore. I'm going to die. I'm going to die if I continue this. And something said, call. Pick up the phone and call. So I called my brother-in-law. He took me to the detox. And in the detox, they gave me pills to calm down. I was set with my back to the wall. From my back to the wall, didn't allow anybody to come, because I thought they were going to try to kill me. I went to bed because I was so tired. I was like, okay, if you guys want to kill me, you're going to kill me. Do it. Just do it. I can't live like this anymore. So I go to bed. I go to bed, the next day somebody knocks on the door and wakes me up. He's like, you want to come for breakfast? I said, okay. I looked up. I felt myself and I'm like, oh my God, I'm alive. I'm alive. But something was different. That obsession to drink was lit. Second day, third day, fourth day, and I came. And it was okay. And I knew on January 8th, I came out of there with that obsession of lifting. But it doesn't mean that I stayed sober. It had to take a lot of work. I came and I knew that this was the only solution once and for all. But it took me another 3 years to sit, go into meetings, going crazy, not doing any steps. And then again, I thought I could concentrate, that my alcohol was okay. I could concentrate on the outside issues. I started going to outside issue meetings. And there where I found I was hanging out too many people, and then overage came back and I relapsed on an outside issue. So my sobriety date is April 27, 2019. From there, I continued my journey. I went back to AA, continued my journey. If anybody here from Maastricht, that is where I picked up my sobriety chip, my 24-hour chip. After that, from there, my journey started. At 3 years after that, I hit the wall again. No steps, no nothing, just me, and I'm dying. And that's when I had to find those angels that were put on my path. I have a to put on my path. I don't do the steps by myself. I do in groups, because then I don't put the groups behind. I have to work. You know, I did my step one, working. I'm powerless over alcohol. I admit that today. I'm an alcoholic. There is no other solution but God. There is no other solution. There is no other solution but that. There was one time when I was driving two or a year and a half ago, and I'm saying, okay, page 55 says that in each and every one of us, there's God. And I'm looking around, I'm looking at all these people, and I'm like, so there's a God in you, and you. And I look at this person, I'm like, there's a God in you. And this person turns around, looks me directly in the eyes. I was just like, oh my God, it's correct. It's in me, it's correct. Then I go, well, how do I know that the rest of the steps? I have to do step four. And what is step four? I don't know how to do step four. It's written in a book, but I don't know how to do it. I need a person. So I have a person take me through it. Write this, write that. So I did. And all that's going to take it to another human being. Oh my God, step five. Oh my God. I take it. Still got time? Okay. So I take it. Yeah, sorry, I'll take it. Yeah, I was drunk a lot. Took a little bit longer. Step five. I took it to another human being. And with doing that step five, I'm reading my step five. In the back of my mind, my ego says, you know what? Don't say that. Don't do that. Don't say that. Why are you saying it? And this is where I feel that it's killing, that it's dying inside, and I'm going to be free. And I go home for that hour, I pick up that book and read it, and it says, I am free. I am starting to know God, and that's what happened. Then I go to 6 and 7, those two little paragraphs, and I don't understand them at all. I go to another meeting, and I ask the person, what is this step 6? How do you know if you did step 6? You can't know. How are you going to know? Only God could know what he's going to take out. Just last week, I went to a meeting where the guy was doing a lot of swearing at a meeting, and I've noticed that I haven't been swearing that much. And I'm not swearing, and he's taken away. Sex was a big problem for me. Big problem for me. I tackled it. I went to SE meetings, and I'm thinking, I'm doing it. Yeah, you know, I'm controlling this. All of a sudden, I put that away. I'm not doing it anymore. And it goes easy. And I know who did the work. It's not me. And I stop fighting it. And I stop fighting it. Step 8, I make a list. I make a list of all the people. There's people that come on. I wrote my best friend today that I've lost to drugs and alcohol. And I'm ready to make those last amends to her. I made amends to my wife where I came to her and I said, listen, I am in this fellowship. If I don't do this, I'm going to go back to drinking. If I go back to drinking, I'm going to die. And I'm sorry. How may I change this? How may I fix this? She says, you can't. But you could be a better father to those kids, and that's what I want you to do. And it's on. That's all. And I seen the tears come flying down her eyes, and I seen that not even was good for me, but it let her loose where she could live her life. She's got a partner now. She's got a child now. I believe she's happy, because they have no contact. I only have contact with my children. But I set her free, and I set myself free. In step 10, I continue to see where I wrong. Where I go. Do I keep making mistakes? Yes, I'm not perfect. That chapter 5, we read it, you know, practice not perfection. That's it. I have the whole life to do this process, you know, and I'm sticking with it. You know, 11, conscious contact with God. I do that. I have that conscious contact. I get down. I heard that story about the camel. The camel kneels out on his front legs, gets the load loaded up on his back in the morning, and at night he goes down on his knees and takes the load off. And that's all I have to do. Pick up that one day, 24 hours a day. That's it. Sometimes my son, because he jumps on my back when he sees me kneeling. Step 12, awakened spirit. What I do with that awakened spirit? I come to these things, you know. There's another convention happening here in a couple months at Hoofies. You know, I get to be around that. I give back what you guys gave me. I've sat in where Jackie is sitting. I'm sorry, Jackie, to use you. But I came in here. This man brought me here. And he saved my life because he brought me here to this convention when I was beaten. I have nothing to live for. And I sat there shaking. I'm shaking today, but not as bad as I was shaking there. And there was three of us that came out of detox. We're sitting there, and there's a beautiful compound tomorrow. And, you know, we're embarrassed because we only have 1 month and 5 days. And, you know, we don't know why. We don't know why we have to do this. But I just say, these guys, this one guy says, you know, let's stand up for 5 months because it's embarrassing. So I'm like, listen, if we stay and do the things that these people do, next year we will have 1 year, 1 month, 5 days. There was three of us. We call ourselves the three musketeers because you can't beat us together. There are only two left now. One is dead. So I know it's a deadly disease. I know it's a deadly disease. But today I'm very thankful. You guys have been a blessing to me. You guys showed me the way. And I try to trudge that way. Thank you very much. This is one of the men also. This guy over here saved my life because when I seen him dance at that disco and I was beat to shit, excuse my language, when I was beat and I seen this guy dancing with the shoes, with the hair, and he was smiling, he was happy. I wanted what he had, and that's why I'm still here. Thank you very much. Sorry, I think so much. Thank you.